Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.
Every time I hear JB, it just brings me back to when Key and JB had that moment. And it was a tough moment.
Who was that?
Justin Bieber. Justin Bieber.
Oh, oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm sorry, I refer to him as JB. Yeah, just
yeah.
No, I don't know the music. So
I know you were singing it, and that's why I found it funny because I knew who was actually singing it.
He was a kid at the time, man.
Yeah,
he's grown
I'm glad
now,
you let that go. I'm glad you let.
Yeah, I would have put him.
We're
on
trying
my
to
knee.
Get both sides and move on.
I
would have
put him on my knee and shanked.
I got it. I'm gonna bring him on the show. He's a friend. You're a friend. We're gonna make this happen.
No, it's fine. I don't have an issue with him. Just slow down. Ain't nope.
As you're I swimming said, hard,
as
JB.
I said before, slow down.
But he is right about like when you're young, you
I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before you have a family, when you're young, you're reckless.
And the enablers and the hanger-ons and the people that you writing checks to for no reason at all almost got you put in a position.
K-I-L-T.
You know, that's all. Yeah, oh yeah.
It happens.
I
can tell when you get angry.
No, I wasn't angry. I'm not angry now, but
No. Then I said
I wanted
you.
To explain to the young man you are moving in an area. First of all, you're in a residential area. You're not in Hollywood hanging out or Brooklyn hanging out with the homies and rapping and doing no, we're not doing that. Not here.
This Calabasas.
Is people behind gates for a reason. They to get away from all of that. Then you come up in here going 100 miles an hour like you lost your damn mind. That's all just a conversation.
Yeah, I know.
But you know, you got all the hanger-ons and the enablers. You know how that is in boxing. You've seen it.
Sure.
People, yes,
entourage,
man, and all that.
Yeah.
Entourage. Like, nah, man, yeah. them dudes,
They mean nope. Entourage for a reason, you know?
By the way, the California stop or roll, whatever they call it, like, you know, the stop
sign. No,
it
wasn't a roll.
But what I'm saying is, like, I have done that in my own neighborhood at times, seen a cop and thought, I'm glad that they're right there because it even reminds me, like, stop. You know, like, my kids are here, too. Everyone's always in a rush.
Dude was young. I think dude at the time might have been, like, 17, 18 years old. Probably made a couple hundred million dollars already. You know? Max?
Yeah.
I'm just glad it didn't go the way that
it
almost went.
Of course.
On both sides.
Of course. Speaking of Hollywood.
Hold on, wait. Evan has a line. Go ahead, Evan.
Oh, God, now there's pressure.
Yeah, pressure.
So that Hollywood role, you guys think, is that like what Sean McVay is going to do when he sees Jared Goff on the sideline this weekend? Like, not really stop, just kind of roll right, maybe a little handshake, but roll right past him?
Well, there's a reason that Evan brings that up. It is apropos.
I think that was a good line, Evan. Well done.
And by the way, we're asking on the Dr. Pepper call-in line.
It's a good line, Jay. You should have stolen
888 it. 888-SAY-ESPN 729-3776. Is it called a Hollywood roll? I thought it was called a California roll.
California roll.
California roll, right? Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, when you don't really stop at the stop sign.
You're talking about sushi, right?
Jeez. Womp, womp, womp. No, California rolls, when you don't stop at the stop sign, you kind of yield
through
and go.
It, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Y'all don't drive out here.
We're asking who pulled off the biggest upset in week 7. Who's going
sushi.
To?
Sushi. That's how you say it.
888-729-3776. Will it be Jared Goff and the Lions returning to Los Angeles? Is Jared Goff going to pull off the upset? Are you willing to go out on a limb?
This a bold prediction?
Bold prediction.
Bold prediction. I think Jared Goff tells Sean McVay to kiss something and he balls out and they rally behind him because how he was done. And all of a sudden, they avoid going 0-17. Because right now, it smells like 0-17.
Sure does.
This could be one of the biggest upsets in the history of sports.
You know, there's some teams who can't even get losing right. Like, the Lions would go 0-17 in a year where there's no surefire quarterback prospect, right? There's no guy you look at, you go, boy, I'm dying to grab this guy this year.
But hopefully, hopefully they don't go 0-17. You never want to wish that on anybody.
Of course.
But in the end, you know, you look at this game, the Rams and the Lions. The Lions are – it's an uphill battle. There's no question about it. It can be done. Somebody gets knocked out of the game. It can be done.
I think the Rams are a little slept on right now. I think the Rams, if you take away that Arizona game, we're calling them the best team in football.
If you take away the Bengals game as well?
For who?
Are you talking about the Rams or the
Rams,
Lions?
Oh, Rams,
I thought you, okay,
Rams.
I thought you said the Lions. I'm sorry.
Are the best team in football?
No. I didn't catch the last thing because I was interjecting.
What I'm saying
that's
is because of what it was a bad home loss to a divisional rival who's really, really good. Yeah. No team's going undefeated, right? You're going to lose some games. Why not to Arizona? And the fact that it was home isn't great, but whatever. It's not really an away.
It's how it happened because at the time that they was losing, they were rolling, right? They had blew a couple teams out, and they just looked, oh, Matthew Stafford, he got it right. Jared Goff, wow, ooh, man, ooh, new stadium, wow, look, you know, and then Arizona came rolling in, and Mighty Mouse went to work.
I just feel like I think there's a good chance the Rams are, in fact, the best team in football, and no one's kind of looking at them that way right now. Now,
they first, certainly got two of the best players at a position.
Yeah.
In Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald.
But we all know, like, this game is about matchups, right? That's in any sport. And when Key always talks about, hey, let's rank the top quarterbacks, you always end up putting Kyler Murray and Lamar Jackson in a box that's separate than the top three because they're just anomalies. Those anomalies are hard to guard.
But one of the things about Stafford that we've always wondered, because his arm talent looks so great, like his is it Detroit that's holding him back in some way? Because, by the way, he orchestrated more fourth quarter comebacks than anyone since he's been in the league. He's kind of like Damian Lillard or someone like that. Like, boy, he's coming back on teams. How would he do in a playoff situation? We're about to find out.
No, for sure you're about to find out.
And by the way, if he balls out in the playoffs, the whole way we look at Stafford's going to change. Yeah, we're going to start to think of him as one of the real top guys.
But here's what I'm going to say about that, though. It's unfortunate, and he shouldn't be judged this way. But based on everything that they gave up to get him, he's got to take him to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. He's got to win. He's got to win because they got to a Super Bowl with Goff.
You've been in the playoffs before. You're 0-3 in the playoffs, even though it's with Detroit. You've got to go to the Super Bowl.
But not year one. He doesn't have to win the Super Bowl
really
year
one. This ain't really a year one, though. Even though
because
he doesn't have training wheels on. They don't need to adjust to him.
No
that
doubt.
Whole adjust, oh, they got to adjust to him. He hasn't had a chance to play with them. Man, they 7 games into the season. They've had training camp. They've had mini camps.
Yeah.
It's not the same as a guy in his first true year like a Tom Brady, for instance.
But my point
is this team was already
yeah, it's right there.
And also,
yeah, it was already in the oven.
And also, Tom Brady's first year was during a pandemic when everything was off.
It's not the same, Max.
There wasn't that same consistency.
What I'm saying is a disaster would be he loses his first playoff game, right? That's a disaster for Stafford and the Rams. I would say neutral. You got to probably win 2 playoff games
if you're
Stafford.
If you win 2 playoff games, you would be in the NFC Championship game.
Yeah, yes. Year one is okay.
You'll be like, okay, NFC Championship game. Okay, that's cool. I get it. They ran up against Dak.
Because it's year one. You're going to have more bites at the apple. That's what I'm saying.
That's okay. Right, we can sell that.
But
I can't sell losing in round 2 and not getting to the NFC Championship
because
game.
Because the reason it's okay is because he's going to, you would think, have more bites at the apple. You say, look, this is just the first. When I see year one, what I mean is, it ain't going to be his only year there, you would think, right?
Exactly.
So, hey, already we're in the NFC Championship game. Look what's to come. Sean McVay said he regretted the way he handled the Jared Goff trade. Remember this? This is Coach earlier in the week.
Yes, I wish that there was better, clear communication. You don't want to catch guys off guard. It came together a lot faster than anybody anticipated. But yeah, of course, I think that you know, anytime that tough decisions and things like that where people are affected, you always want to be as understanding, as empathetic as possible. Think about it through the other person's lens. And there's certainly things that I know I would do it a little bit differently if I, when those situations arise in the future. But I think Jared knows the respect that I have for him.
Well, based on everything that you just apologized for, I don't know that Jared thinks you have respect for
That's
him.
Why you say bold prediction, Jared might ball out?
Yeah, because when you say it didn't happen, it happened faster than what we thought. I can believe that. It's a slight conversation. Hey, I'll talk to you a week from now. We got some things going. We're going on vacation, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, boom, let's do it. Okay, I get that part. But it's a way that you communicate with people when you're deciding to do something with their careers. It's simple because you sit there and you tell them, hey, we're looking at, be honest and transparent in the situations. Mm-hmm. We're looking at another quarterback. We're looking at maybe doing some other things. We're not 100% sure, but we want to let you know that there may be a possibility that you're on the move. And when I got traded from the New York Jets to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Jay, and Coach Parcells, you know, he called and said, hey, man, we got a chance to get 2 ones, and you got a chance to get what you're looking for. Let's see if it comes to fruition. We'll get back to you in a couple of days and let you know. Don't say anything to anybody. Here are the teams, the Green Bay Packers, the Baltimore Ravens, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They're all kind of, let me know. I was like, cool, all right, I get it.
When I got a challenging call about what my career would be like with the Bulls, that didn't come from the head coach. That came from our GM. Mm-hmm. Did any of your calls come from, like, was that Mike Tannenbaum?
That was Bill Parcells was our, he was running the whole organization.
He was running the whole organization.
Yeah, he had stepped down as the head coach. It was running the entire organization. And so you respect that.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Is that the head coach's job or is that more the general manager's job?
Well, in this instance with Sean McVay, the relationship with Jared Goff was close. He coached him. He's a quarterback coach, offensive coordinator. And essentially, he is, to a degree, the general manager. Even though Les Snead is running the show. It's fine for him to have a conversation with him. In today's world of professional football, most of the coaches are lockstep with the general managers. Very few general managers running the whole thing.
It's one of those things that you can say, like, oh, of course I wish I would have handled that differently. But at the same time,
man, he was in Cabo.
We are in a lot better of a situation right now.
He was in Cabo having fun, man. I get it.
I know if it's up to Jay, we just talk football all day. However, we have a basketball. Someone who wants to talk a little basketball with us. Yeah. Jay, so I'm sorry, but we're going to have to. Key and I have to insist. We're talking NBA.
Understood,
now, Jay,
guys.
Okay?
Understood.
Yes. Kendrick Perkins, our NBA analyst, is ready. Keyshawn, Jay, Will, and Max, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join on the Goodyear Hotline from. One team that regrets how they handled the trade to one team that should regret not making a trade. Am I right? Am I right? Look, before we bring in Perk, let's hear from Daryl Morey and what he said yesterday when it comes to trading Ben Simmons.
This is a very good player. And to give ourselves the best chance to win the title, you need difference makers. You don't need role players. Right now, any sort of trade, which obviously Ben Simmons wants, the best thing we can do is get role players back. That makes no sense. That will give us no better chance to win the title if we were to move Ben Simmons for role players. So people should buckle in. I mean, this is going to go a long time because our only path, my only job is to help us give the best chance to win the title. Ben Simmons is a difference maker, so if we can get him back, he will help us win the title. If we can trade Ben Simmons for a difference maker, we will do it. I think that's best for everyone in this situation.
Mm. Big Perk.
Perk, you there? With us?
Yeah, I'm right here. I'm right here.
Well, Big
right
Perk.
Here. What's up, Max? What's up, Key? What up, Jay?
What up, Big Perk, man? There you go right there, big fella. Well, they won't be trading Ben Simmons for you after that jumper I saw you shoot the other day.
Man, leave my man alone. He had a suit on.
hey, Key, they set me up for that one, Key. They set me up for that one. You know what I mean?
That was not Kendrick Perkins' job to shoot jump shots. Everyone has a role on a championship team. Man is a champion.
Big Perk, what is your takeaway after hearing Daryl Morey make those comments publicly?
Well, I mean, you know, to me, Daryl Morey was speaking for ownership, in my opinion. And see, look, this is bigger than Philly and Ben Simmons. This is about owners versus players right now. And if people think that the owners around the league are not talking about this situation behind closed doors or behind the scenes, they are crazy. And right now, all the owners probably in the NBA are supporting the Philadelphia 76ers ownership to stand their ground. And I knew that we were going to get to this point because, look, they're tired of guys forcing their way out. They're tired of players having so much control, making so much money, and when they get tired, they leave the franchise hanging. So right now, when you look at I think this is a statement. And like Daryl Morey said, look, we're not about to sit up here and clean up your mess, right? You're the one that performed poorly last year on the court. And I get it. People want to talk about, oh, Doc Rivers said this after the game. Joel said this after the game. But they didn't lie. They didn't lie. And so at the end of the day, right now, when I'm looking at Ben Simmons, two words come to mind. Soft and selfish, right? Because he doesn't have that mentality to go out there and prove the doubters wrong. And I just think that's who he is. But look, Philly is going to stand pat. I told people this a month ago when this first happened.
So, Perk, okay, they're going to stand pat, right, big dog? What the hell they going to do? You're going to roll a dude in and make him play? Okay, so he stands out there. Then what? He got 150 racks guaranteed. So he goes, he shows up, you put him on the court, you throw him a ball, he lets it bounce off his chest, and now his back hurts. Like, what? Why are you trying to force somebody to play for you that does not want to be in the building? Why?
But, Key, I just told you, it's bigger than this situation right now. They're making a statement. I don't even think Philly at this moment cares if they actually win a championship right now. They are making a statement. That's so, what they care about more so than anything. And if I'm – look, to me, if I'm – go ahead. If I'm Ben Simmons, I'm like this here, right? I need to get on the court. I need to perform well so that my trade value can go up so that people can say, you know what? Here, I could put a better offer on the table. But now if he doesn't play, he's just going to be in Philly and he's going to be miserable.
But Big Perk, I hear you on that. But when I hear Daryl Morey talk about, you know, buckle up, this could be a four-year ride, I start thinking about, okay, I hear you and I feel your stance from an ownership perspective. I get that. But what does that do to my star player in Joel Embiid, who has publicly stated that he does not care for what this man does right now, that obviously you and I both know there's been challenges there between that relationship for a very long time. So at what juncture, if this whole thing keeps going back and forth, when Joel Embiid is going to look at them and be like, yo, I can't do this anymore, y'all. I can't be around this man. Like, when is it going to get to that point? Can it get to that point?
No, it's not going to get to that point, Jay, because if you don't think that Doc Rivers and Elton Brand and Daryl Morey are communicating with Joel Embiid, you tripping right now, Jay. They're talking with him. That's why he's able to speak freely. Look, when Joel Embiid signed that contract extension this summer, this didn't just happen. Ben Simmons been not responding to the Philadelphia 76ers and his teammates. He been not returning phone calls. So when Joel Embiid signed on the dotted line, he knew that this was a possibility that it could happen. Now what Joel Embiid is doing, Jay, he's doing a great job of being a leader. And I say that because
now he
has
is,
to
Perk.
Set an example.
Now he is. He hasn't always
what
been the
mean?
Case. I mean, that hasn't always been
yeah,
the case. That just started last year, though. I mean, there's been a lot of things that have happened. I'm not making – you know how I'm built, Big Perk. I'm not making excuses for Ben Simmons. I just feel like all this has been thrown on the shoulders of Ben Simmons, like he is the only person that is the villain in this whole thing, and it doesn't seem to be culpability on both sides here. You know what I mean?
Well – I feel you, Jay, but listen, what I'm saying is about Joel Embiid being a leader. What I'm saying about him being a leader is he's being a leader to the other guys in the locker room. He's saying, you know what? I got to worry about going to war with my other teammates. I can't be concerned about being in his situation. Now, I will say this, right? I mean, you know, look, both parties are at fault at some capacity. Right, but let's be mindful that all last year, Doc Rivers stood up for Ben Simmons. He stood up for Ben Simmons. That wasn't the first question that was asked about Doc Rivers and Ben. I mean, about Ben Simmons. That was like the sixth question. And Doc Rivers, I remember one interview. He said, "Do you expect me to bench Ben Simmons, my all-star, my all-NBA player? I'm not doing that." And then when you look at the Atlanta Hawks series, look, they couldn't get into a flow of things, right? Because they kept fouling Ben and his confidence was gone. Well, to the point where people, Philly fans, was asking for Tyrese Maxey. They wanted Tyrese Maxey to come in the game, but Doc said, you know what? No, I trust you, Ben. I'm going to continue to rock with you until the wheels fall off. And they happy. I mean, they fell off. He still rolled.
Look, Ben, what this really comes down to is Ben Simmons just refuses to shoot the ball. He refuses to shoot the ball. That's what we're doing. But and Jason Kelce, who is a local sports, you know,
icon
hero in good in good standing with the people of Philadelphia, won a championship, a Super Bowl in Philly. Oh, were they starving for that? Jason Kelce said this about the situation.
You write your own narrative. You know what's going on. I don't want to crush any other player. What's going on with the 76ers, Ben Simmons, stuff like that. All that is because of a lack of accountability, a lack of owning up to mistakes, and a lack of correcting things. If all that got corrected, if you're fixing free throws, if you're getting better as a player, none of this is happening. So you can, everybody can complain about, you know, how tough this city is to play in. Just play better, man. The city will love you.
I agree with Jason Kelce. I'm not sitting here saying I don't agree. And Perk, I know how you're built. I know sure as hell how I'm built. I know how Key is built. I will walk back up into the Wells Fargo Center tonight and try to bust the Brooklyn Nets heads open to the white meat, drop 35, 17, and 15, and look at everybody and be like, yeah, blank all y'all. Like, I know who I am. But that's not who Ben Simmons has shown you he is, y'all. Like, that's what, why are we trying to make Ben Simmons? I hear you. Go ahead, Perk.
Yeah, but Jay, let me ask you this, and I understand what you're saying, right? But let me ask you this question. If you were a general, say you were the general manager of the Minnesota Timberwolves, and you were kind of looking, and I was your assistant GM, okay? And we were actually looking to trade for Ben Simmons. You're telling me with your mindset, with my mindset, the way that we go about approaching things, not only on the court, but everyday life, and you're telling me we looking at Ben Simmons in the way that he's handling this situation, and we're like, man, we're 100% trade for him. Once he get here, he's going to change. No, you want somebody that got that dog in him.
I do,
you
Perk, want somebody that – if I'm in a small market, Perk, I'm going for it. I'm getting him. I don't have a chance to get players like this that want to be. I'm going for Ben Simmons. 6'11", can be a defensive menace, can be a great passer who is actually a point forward, not a point guard. And I think a new surrounding would be different for him, man. I would go get him.
Y'all already got a bad front office, Perk. Y'all disagreeing on a player, man. I can't listen to this.
And by the way, I'd like to extend an invitation. Guys, I'd like to extend an invitation to Ben Simmons to come on this show. Because I have just one question for Ben Simmons. Just one.
Why won't he shoot? I know.
Just
I know.
Shoot the
but
ball.
But Ben Simmons hasn't said anything throughout this
just
whole time.
He's an incredible player.
I feel you, Big
just
Perk.
Just shoot the ball.
I feel
that's
you,
all.
Big Perk. I feel you.
This will all work itself out if you shoot the ball.
You're trading for him, Perk not trading for him. You're trading for him, Perk not trading for him.
I'll trade for him if I'm a small market. I agree with Jay. You get Ben Simmons, you can't find players like that. All right. Kendrick Perkins on the Goodyear Hotline. All right, Perk.
We're going to work on that shot, Perk, baby. Don't worry. I'm out there next week. We're going to work on that shot.
He's there to grab rebounds and play some defense.
Perk, you don't need to shoot when you can put people in the bucket. You know what I mean?
People in the bucket, huh?
Yeah. Hey, Key, don't judge me, man. Don't judge me. RJ set me up for that, man.
Okay.
He set me up.
All right, baby.
Brought to you by Goodyear, making the plays and moving forward. Yes, Perk. Last words, Perk.
No, I was just telling Key I couldn't follow through because you know I didn't put on that retirement 75 pounds, so my suit jacket be a little tight. I didn't want to split my coat.
Okay,
you
baby.
Know what I mean?
Okay.
So I had to kind of, you know what I mean? Yeah. Right. Yeah, I couldn't split my jacket on national television.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, presented by Progressive Insurance. Clinton Yates is with us, giving us the straight talk. Brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. It's Clinton Yates from the Undefeated hosting Around the Horn this week.
I know.
What's going on?
Weird. I'm good, man. I'm in New York. I've been hosting Around the Horn all week.
My old show.
I know. This is crazy. It's wild. But, you know, this is where we are now. And we had some good baseball last night.
How long? Around the Horn's been on the air. I was the first host of that show. One of the architects of that show, Clinton.
Correct.
Well, that was 2002, 2003?
Yeah, wow. Max doesn't remember this, but when I was in college on spring break one time, I like busted into the studio via Tony K, and I met him. This was many years ago, so it was a pretty full circle.
Was I nice or was
you
I?
You were very nice. Okay, you were very nice.
Good.
Yes,
it was
very
nice
kind. So yes.
All right. So the Dodgers had the big win last night. The series heads back to Atlanta. So like, how do they come back from the 3-1 again in consecutive years?
Okay, so I think that there's this stat out there that the Dodgers have won a bunch of elimination games in a row, which I think is a little misleading because it's like, listen, Key, relax. I'm saying if you're in a position to get knocked out, that's why you're winning so many elimination games, as opposed to being able to actually take control of a series or two here and there, which is what they have not been able to do. And they played in the wild card game. But The key to this is that they're starting against Ian Anderson, Key. And yeah. Ian Anderson in the first inning is not good. That's his worst inning period. So they can find a way to jump on them. Even though they're on the road, they're going to be able to find a way to win this game because they just got too much talent in the lineup, even with Turner out and even with Muncy out.
Yeah, Scherzer is on the mound for us. And, I mean, he was okay last outing. Not great, but okay.
Okay. I mean, he literally said, and this is the only time I've ever heard a pitcher say this, Jay, my arm is dead. That's not a good sign. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, a lot of people are starting to point to Dave Robertson saying that the usage rate on a lot of the pitchers is high. But, yeah, because when we getting rocked in certain innings, it's easy to go to that.
Yeah.
Then when we start doing what we do on the offense, that's not really good English. But
that's not
when we start doing the things that we're capable of doing,
there you go.
Then people change because on the offensive side, our bats start to go. And when our bats start to go, people forget about the bad pitching. When you get runs, people forget about the runs that you've given
up. That's true.
I mean, that's the reality of it.
I got to ask you,
Dodgers just a good, deep team, man.
They are. Yeah. But if the Braves are able to pull this off, sorry, Key. What does that mean about, like, the city of Atlanta? You got the Braves are doing this now. The Hawks are actually transcending Trae Young, Ice Trae. It feels like things are University of Georgia. I mean,
Atlanta's a fun place to be right now. Shouts to my man Harry Lyles, by the way, who covers college football. He lives down there. He's on around the horn every once in a while. But the thing about the Braves is this. They came into the playoffs with the worst record of any team in the playoffs. Yeah. So this is an accomplishment.
Well, they went 88?
Yeah, I mean, this is really Brian Snitker. He's the manager of that team. You know, they retooled their entire outfield at the trade deadline. And that's, you know, and for me, they're a cool baseball story sort of beyond Atlanta. Like, that's the way you want a team to be able to do it. You make a few moves. You've got a manager who's not necessarily the most well-known guy, but he knows his personnel well. And you've got Freddie Freeman, a real deal star in this league. You saw him homer yesterday after a long, long he'd been in a drought. You know what I'm saying? He hadn't been able to hit very well at all. So for him to get off the schneid was good for Atlanta as well.
How great has Chris Taylor been, though, this postseason?
Bro. I mean, so the thing about those three homers is you talk about
not
Reggie
even the
Jackson.
Three homers. I'm just talking about just the postseason.
That's what I'm trying to explain, and this is going to explain it. You talk about Reggie Jackson. You talk about all those things in terms of history. First one he took out was first pitch. The next two he took out were two strike hits. And, like, for me, if you're locked in like that going in through the game, that shows exactly what you're talking about, Key. This guy's been seeing the ball well, and for a lineup that's got as much firepower as they have that has not necessarily been producing, this is what they needed in a major way. This is what it was going to take. It was going to take an outstanding, literally outstanding performance for them to stay alive, and they got it from Taylor, the UVA grad.
Like, I always look at, and this is changing in football, but football is sort of a coach's game.
Mm-hmm.
Basketball is a player's game. Baseball, I always think of as a GM's game. Like, you put the roster together. That's the most important guy in the organization is the GM, making the moves. But there's something about a team that consistently wins elimination games, right? Where it comes down to one game, it can't just be the GM has a deep roster. There has to be some kind of character in the team after a while, you think. How would you describe what that is?
Well, they're the defending champions. I mean, I think that's probably the main driving source that they know they can win because they literally have the trophy on the shelf.
But they did it to win the trophy.
Year. But I'm saying, like, that's my point.
Confidence,
you know what I mean?
Man.
It's confidence based on having won. And I also think Roberts specifically and the manager is the type of person who, I know, listen, we can talk about the relationship between the GM and Dave Roberts, but people remember what Dave Roberts did as a player, as the Red Sox. He came in, he stole that base that everybody knew he was going
to take. I still hate him for that. I tell him every time I talk to him.
That's what I'm saying. That's the character of who this team is. And I think it's unfortunate, too, because Turner going out was one thing, but when Max Muncy went down, it completely changed the entire ability of what they had to do. They had to figure out all these things in terms of who was playing first base, who was going to play center field. I still sort of think that they should have given Trey Turner a shot at center field. I think that messed with his mojo, and as a result, he's in the tank at the plate. But the talent level is too high for the Dodgers, I think, for them to be just satisfied with we're going to get knocked out by a team that, like I said, came into the playoffs with the worst record of any team.
So who do you have winning it?
I think the Braves are going to win this game, but mainly because I'm not confident in Scherzer, man. I just think that a guy who says, my arm is dead, a guy who says, my arm is dead, they got to figure out what's going to be with their bullpen. They played a bullpen game last game.
Yeah.
That went well. So hopefully Scherzer can get 4-5, and maybe Pujols can probably get back in the mix. He played a good game last night, but I just think that the Braves right now are streaking in a different way. He's out here hating.
I mean, the Braves, who've been excellent almost every year for a million years now, have one championship to show for it. It'd be so funny if this is the year they did it when they only came in with 88 wins.
I want the Dodgers to win. I just think that the Braves are looking at it right now.
Clinton is hosting Around the Horn this week. You can check them out on ESPN Today at 5 p.m. Eastern. Stick around. We're going to get your thoughts on the Lakers and some other things.
The Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max Podcast.
Ben Simmons' agent, Rich Paul, he has told the Sixers that Ben Simmons is not mentally ready to play yet.
So for the first time in Joel Embiid's career, you're telling me they did a team bonding experience on the road where he actually got a chance to say, oh, it feels like this is my team now and we can kick it? That speaks volumes.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio. Clinton Yates from the Undefeated hosting Around the Horn this week. Hey. Check him out today, 5 p.m. Eastern. So we've been talking about Ben Simmons all day, of course. What are your thoughts on the Simmons situation?
I got to say, I've been thinking about this from a larger perspective, which is that this all started when Doc Rivers said on a live microphone he wasn't sure if Ben Simmons could be a championship-level point guard. And the whole thing sort of shifted and became clear that Ben didn't want to play there. And I've started thinking about now, you know, we live in a world in which player empowerment is a completely different concept than it was even as recently as when you played. And so there is some responsibility of a team to make sure that the guys on the roster want to play for you. And while I think Ben Simmons has been acting very childishly, I do think that there's a discussion to be had here about what happens if guys more largely just start saying, you know what, I don't actually like you. I'm not actually going to play. Franchises are going to have to start to adjust to that in a different kind of way. And so while I think Ben is kind of going at this in a weird way, there is a lesson to be learned here more largely about what it is in the modern NBA to put together a team. You have to be able to make sure that the dudes you pick up actually want to play for your squad.
You see, this is where I think that you might see a slight shift because the NBA has been a more progressive league. But I think owners are starting to get to the point where it might start to trend more like the NFL, where owners are a lot more staunch in their decision about, nah, I'm not going to let this happen. And that's the messaging I got yesterday from Daryl Morey. Doesn't matter what you want, we're not going to acquiesce. We're not going to allow you to be an insubordinate.
Only experience I have is in the NFL when it comes to not wanting to be on a team. When you go to an owner, general manager, and you have your meeting and you let them know, under no circumstances am I going to step on the field, they move on from you. They do not try and force you to play for them because, much like the Ben Simmons situation, you can't play for them. My teammates don't want me. They know that I've checked out. My house is on the market for sale. You're expecting me to come in and help you win, and my mind is somewhere else. It doesn't work like
this
that.
Is,
I can't be in love with you, and my mind is thinking about him or her. Yeah. It doesn't work like that.
This was going to happen eventually. And what do I mean by this? In a league where you get drafted, you're not really free. And the way the CBA is set up is no one ever walks away, ever, from that first max contract extension. It's too much money to leave on the table. They've rigged it so that for the first 6 years of your career, you are tied to a location if you're a top player, right? Now, you get rich from it, but you got to play someplace you may not want to play, right? So the players are going to use their leverage to strike back. Okay. Then the teams are going to say at a certain point, by strike back, it's like, well, I'm just going to take the money. Jay, you mentioned it, and figure out the details later. But I'm going to take that first money, right? And now the teams are saying, yeah, but time out. If you do take the money, if you're James Harden and you don't have a lot of time left on your deal or whatever the case may be, maybe you can use leverage. But eventually this was going to happen. A dude that just signed his deal was going to say, I want out. And then we don't know what's going to happen. This is uncharted territory.
The difference is between football and even, say, international soccer, though, is that the smallest amount of players at the highest level are in the NBA. We're talking about 450 total jobs. So the actual numbers allow for that. You know what I'm saying? Because there's not other Ben Simmonses. You know what I mean? There's not the next man up at the top level of NBA talent. So eventually, let's say in 10 years, this might start working where guys would just say, you know what? No, you have to change because I'm the talent. There's no basketball without me. And it's fascinating.
True. And that's true, Clinton. That may be the case or whatnot. But when you look at the NFL and you look at some of the players in the NFL that have the power to move the needle and move things around. Just for instance, you got a guy like Lamar Jackson who's trying to get big money. If Lamar Jackson went to the Baltimore Ravens and said, you know, I just don't want to be here. I just don't want to play for you. They're not going to try and hold him hostage and make it. They're going to try to find a partner. The only reason why the Houston Texans can't find a partner for Deshaun right now is because of his off-the-field situation. But once he went to them, they bullied up their chest and said, we're not doing nothing. Then all of a sudden, this came out. But eventually, they were going to move on from it. When are they going to pay Lamar, man?
I don't know, man. That dude, I said this since he was at Louisville. The Lamar Jackson show is the best show in America, and it's not close, man. That dude, he plays football the way that you see your friends play football when you're a kid, and you're like, oh, he'll be pretty good.
He plays football like the dude on Madden.
You know what I'm saying?
Who took Mike Vick back in the day and had more skills than everyone else playing the game, and you're like, this is not fair.
I was at the game that they played against the Rams two seasons ago at the Collie, I think it was.
Yeah, 2 seasons ago.
They scored 4 touchdowns in 30 minutes. 30 clock minutes.
And they still
not 30 NFL minutes.
And that's what they were still talking about. They were still talking about he couldn't throw.
Bro.
He was dicing and slicing. Hollywood Brown was catching balls. Ingram out of the backfield. It was crazy, Jay. Now they take on the Cincinnati Bengals, which has a young quarterback in itself, and Joe Burrow, somebody you like, Jay, and Ja'Marr Chase. How you think the outcome's going to be there?
You ask me? You ask
me. Yeah, you. I'm looking at you.
I would give Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase a fighting chance here. Like, you know, Lamar does so much, and obviously Mark Andrews, Marquise Hollywood Brown help him with that, and they are the best show on football, but I'm not discounting where this Bengals team is going.
I'm not saying they're going to win,
but there is something special about what Joe Burrow and company have been able to create in such a short amount of time.
Key, I would give the Bengals a much bigger chance if this game was in Ohio, but I think at home, I think the Ravens are just a little too tough right now, man. He's locked in. He's
know what else? Yeah, I keep saying it. Patrick Mahomes' pelt is on Lamar Jackson's wall for the first time this year. Right next to it, there's hanging Justin Herbert, right? Oh, big game hunting. Joe Burrow is on his way to being one of those dudes. You know Lamar wants to put that guy right next to those other two.
Yeah, they're going
to
blow them up, I think. I mean, I think that'll be a fun game, but I see the Ravens just keep on clicking. I don't know if they're the best team in the NFL right now, Key, but I don't know that there's a better one, you know?
Arizona, it's NFC, right? The NFC from top to bottom, when you start talking Arizona, Dallas, Green Bay, Tampa Bay, especially when they get their people back the way they're supposed to, the Rams. Then when you look in the AFC, it's Baltimore.
Buffalo.
Buffalo-ish. Kansas City, I'm never going to count out.
Never.
You can't count them out.
Can't count them out.
I don't trust the Chiefs these days, man. That defense is.
But the defense has been that way. But the defense has been that way for a while now.
That's just outscore you.
I trust them. Everyone just calm down about Patrick Mahomes. He's going to be fine. If the Bengals win this game, do you put the Bengals in that AFC category with the Bills and the Ravens if they win this game? Guys, at a certain point,
I come back to work on Monday, and then I have a ranking on Tuesday, then you'll see.
Oh,
yeah. It depends on how they win that game. I mean, if they win by a field goal at the last second,
that's good.
Not really.
I'm not saying they're number one. I'm not saying
you just won games down at home versus on the road.
I mean, I'm not saying you put them number one, but are they in the discussion with the Bills and the Ravens? Right.
Yeah, sure.
Absolutely.
I mean, they're a playoff.
They're in the discussion because of wins.
Expected playoff team at that point, I would say.
On the road.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
That's tough cookie.
I said Joe Burrow in his career so far, college and pro, has done a lot of winning. The dude just wins.
Put some lotion on those legs.
Man, I got plenty of lotion on Nivea.
Why are you always looking at people's ankles and legs?
Look at my shoes, man. I got the Nat Geo Vans on. Y'all can't see those on the
door. Nat Geo Vans?
Yeah, man. It's a special issue. Y'all know about that.
Facts.
Thanks for listening to Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.